Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Happy to have you with us. But first, I want to tell you about one of the sponsors we have here on the show. The NFL draft is one of the most anticipated days of any football fan's calendar, and that also means fantasy football season is not too far behind. DynastySportsEmpire.com is going to change the way you play fantasy football. DSE offers fantasy football gamers of all skill levels an opportunity to draft and retain your well-maintained rosters and players for their entire NFL career. Highlighted with large rosters, high-scoring games, easy payouts, and an amazing online community, DSE has everything you would want in a challenging online experience. Please visit them online today at DynastySportsEmpire.com. That's DynastySportsEmpire.com. And check out all the amazing upcoming formats for this upcoming fantasy football season. Go check them out. We got a great episode for you today, so let's get to it.
Hi, everyone. My name is Scott Tillema. I'm excited to be joining Scott and Michael on Verbal Shenanigans. We're going to be talking about crisis and hostage negotiation and how you can use the techniques that we use to save lives to get what you want in your life. Join us. Verbal Shenanigans, Scott Tillema. Can't wait to see you there.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome on back. Welcome, fans. Welcome, fantwans. Welcome, everybody, back into the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Mike, Verbalions. That's what it was. The Verbalions are catching on. Yes. I think we have our first Verbalion out there.
Well, it was just a matter of time, Scott. Once we got that catchy phrase, it was just a matter of time before we'd get one. When we get two, I'm thinking months, years ahead. But we just got to get that one to kind of start talking stuff. And at first, they'll be talking to their friends. They're like, well, that's a little weird and whatever. But eventually, number two will arrive.
Yeah, I'll give a shout-out to our Verbalion. In one of the tweets, it was Groovy Joan. She also messaged us Shenanigang. So she might be both a Verbalion and in the shenanigang, if you will.
She's the leader of the shenanigang. I believe we talked about our motorcycle gang that we were going to bring together to...
That's true.
Yeah, I believe the Undertaker was a part of it.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Yep, Chris Christie was our whooping boy who will take the fall for everything. And our newest Verbalion will join us.
I'm amazed at you. I can barely remember anything we talk about that at this point. Like, it's been so long that, like, even this week's episode, like, as I go to put it up and upload it to the internet, I'm like, what the hell did we talk about? I have to, like, scrub through the audio to be like, oh, yeah, we did talk about that. And then, like, when the episodes are really nonsensical, kind of like last week with Pilgrim Mike, I had no idea what was going on until I found it again. And then, actually, I believe it even might have been Groovy Joan, if you're out there. Thank you, Groovy Joan. She commented, hi, Scott and Pilgrim Mike. So they're out there. Maybe, listen, we will take all, maybe the Chanel, I almost called them Chanelians. Not terrible.
All right, well, we got to get that copyright just to make sure, just in case.
Maybe the Verbalions will become, if we start with the Fantwans, they seem to have room in their heart to start another gang and start another allegiance. Ooh. Maybe they'll become our people.
I would like that, a little offshoot gang, mm-hmm. You know? I mean, that's when it's like when things are getting rough in the streets, they're like, oh, you just thought you were fighting us, and then they would just point over and all the Verbalions would be just strutting down the street with their green and yellow jackets ready to just, you know, somebody's got like a lead pipe just swinging in their hand. They're like, oh, damn. And then they take off.
Listen, if you are out there and listening, and there's enough interest out there, and you want a Verbalion shirt, and then Verbalion, like numbered, Verbalion 1, Verbalion 2, as we sell the shirts, we can make this happen. You just have to contact us and interact with us so we actually know that I'm not going to spend a whole lot of money again on t-shirts that are still in my garage. So if anybody wants a Verbal Shenanigans t-shirt, please, I'll send it to you for free. Just pay the shipping and we're good to go.
Yeah, literally just chime us on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook and say you're interested in the shirt, tell us your size, and we'll get the things rolling, man.
Yeah, I got a good amount of them left, blue and yellow ones, and I wanted to get new ones eventually, but I'm not going to get new ones until we clear this stock out, so hit us up. For everyone that's just tuning in, that's Mike. I'm Scott, and we work our way to 400 episodes here, Mike, as we speak. And as we today are at 365 or something like that, Philly's finest, Mike, your territory, Philly's finest, Bill Cosby released from prison. How do you feel about this, knowing that you're a huge Cosby supporter? Those of you just tuning in, Mike, along the way, has always said, I think Bill Cosby's a swell guy. He represents Philly well. He never did anything wrong. Mike's always been all about the cause. So, Mike, I know this is shocking news for you.
Yeah, I had a tear in my eye as I read it on my phone as I was rewatching season 4 of A Different World. I was so ecstatic with the announcement of the cause, because I was behind the cause, if you will.
Wow. You are just Verbalion, the cause, the shenanigang. They're just flowing out of you like a river of I don't know any words anymore. A river of analogies? No. A river of slogans? No. Anyway, back to Cosby.
Word salad.
So, being the big supporter of Cosby that you are, I hope that catches on.
big supporter of the Klan and the cause.
For those
who don't know, I'll just clarify. We sent a tweet once to a member of the Wu-Tang Clan. I was like the head of Twitter, and do you remember which member it was, out of curiosity?
Oh, I love your title that you just gave yourself, the head of Twitter. That is a great, is that in your Indeed too? Verbal Shenanigans, a podcaster, co-host, head of Twitter.
I am. Like, sometimes Scott's like, I want to tweet something. I'm like, Scott, as a head, I'm going to decline it. Sorry, buddy.
You know how you really got to like kind of lie and beef up your resume sometimes to really fluff it up? That would be a great fluff one. Head of Twitter and PR for the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
But as I was just trying any like phrase, and this was pre-Twitter adding, what I think they're up to 200-some characters now. This is like the 128 days. I forget which member it was, but I said, hey, whoever, big supporter of the Klan, wanting to see if you want to join on the podcast.
Yeah.
Then the next week, Scott kind of reiterated, the wording may have not been the best.
Considering all members of the Wu-Tang Clan are very African-American, Mike, big supporter of the Klan might have, you know, rubbed them the wrong way, especially since you spelled it with a K.
No, I did not spell with a K. It was a C. I did do proper spelling, at least on that. It's a rarity.
I think it was like Raekwon, or
possibly, believe so,
or You God, one of them. But yeah, so yeah, tell us about Cosby, Mike. I actually didn't read. I saw it. Like, I saw the post that he's free. How did he get off again?
From what I understand, as his lawyer was bringing the case up to the Supreme Court of the state, Pennsylvania. Apparently, the Supreme Court kind of overturned it on the technicality of basically, since they allowed like other women to come up with the, this kind of still happened to me. They basically declared that's really not allowed in courts. Even you can't say, if you're on charge for I did something to girl A, they can't use as evidence, well, let's bring in girl B, C, D, who claimed the same thing happened, but no charges were put against them, kind of thing. So that's kind of my kind of quick analogy of what happened, but that's what's occurring that they said that the prosecutors shouldn't have been allowed in the case to present these other women in the case. And by rule, they can't allow that conviction to go ahead. Now, I don't know if that means that in turn is a mistrial and they can bring them back on charges. But simply put, the second that happened, a couple hours later, Cosby got out of jail and he's back home living it up and probably listening to some Little Rascals at home.
Yeah, just putting that sweater back on, sitting on the couch.
Yeah, women do not go to that celebration party tonight. I got to be honest.
Yeah.
There are many things you can do tonight. I know like the world is opening up, but do not go to the Bill Cosby celebration tonight.
That's wild, man. Like, so is it kind of like he served his time for the one, but he can't be charged for the others, or the whole the whole sentence was off? Like they found
The sentence was for one person because a lot of them occurred 60s, 70s, and statute of limitations applied to them. This was one that was still within the statute, but since I guess the Supreme Court is saying you can't present certain evidence in a trial to be used in determining whether you're guilty or not, they're saying, well, since we don't feel that's correct, we have to overturn what happened. But again, I still don't know exactly. Does that mean can they go back after him and have another trial or what? He served over 2 years of his 10-year sentence.
God, not only that, like for how long it would take the trial, like how many years does he have left? He might just stay at, you know, he might, if they just keep putting it off and delaying it and deferring it and everything else.
He's got enough money. He can buy the Epstein Island and go over there and just stay there for the rest of his life.
Yeah. It's interesting because I just watched a documentary. I think it was called Dream Killer on Netflix. I think that's what it's called. But it's about, I don't know if you remember, there was a Ryan Ferguson. He was a kid who got accused of murder, and basically his the person he was with essentially said they killed this guy in a parking lot. He said that Ryan was with him. He like shot him or something like that, or beat him up and stabbed him, and then Ryan came over and choked him out with a belt. But it turns out the kid was like high and drunk and blacked out and just remembered that he was with the kid, and he just like made it up in the morning. And the kid basically served 10 years in prison, and he got the one lawyer from Making a Murderer. She was helping him in his case, and and basically his dad basically campaigned all over the country to like help get it overturned, and it's just like every single step was like deferred, denied, every appeal. They had like all the main witnesses of the original case basically saying like, yeah, that wasn't true, I made this up, and they still just appeal. It's like, here's one case, we got Cosby, who is a piece of crap. If he did it to one woman, that's too many, you know. And he's able to get off and get this you know, this loophole in the thing. And then there's this kid who's completely innocent, and lost 10 years of his life, and they just make the justice system so hard, even with evidence, that they don't want to be wrong and go against their verdict. Like the one lawyer was saying, she's the one who got, like, she takes on basically cases for people that are probably wrongfully incarcerated, and she basically said a good estimate, she thinks there could be up to like 20,000 people behind bars that shouldn't be behind bars. And she said they've just made the legal system so hard to appeal anything, where an appeal, or at least like a presentation of new evidence and new scientific evidence, like, should be a fairly easy thing. Like, hey, we found this new evidence, at least can you hear the case? You know what I mean? Like, it takes, you know, 2 years between one thing, 3 years before, as people are just wasting away. Now, the kid's gone on to do some really cool things. I, like, followed him on Instagram or whatever. But he still says, like, his life's just kind of like, it's just, there's something missing. Like, he's just not the same person. So it's like an interesting parallel. Here's one piece of garbage getting off on a loophole, and then here's a kid who just got completely railroaded. And she was even saying, if it sounds like you always say, it can't happen to me, it can't happen to me. All it takes is me and like one other person to be like, yeah, we saw Mike do it. And you suddenly become the main witness in something, and you're going to be the guy they take in and then figure it out. And anybody under trial is going to be, it's hard to get off, man. It's hard to win.
Yeah. And then on like top of it, you look at Cosby, for everything I heard, like he basically had his own like section of the jail.
Of course he did.
One, he's a celebrity. Two, he's blind. So he basically, for what, I'm not going to say he didn't have any hard times. I'm sure it was not pleasant, but at the same time, he didn't get a real jail sentence of it. And there's even like pictures of him like laughing and all talking to I don't know if it's a lawyer or somebody visited him laughing about stuff or whatever. So it's kind of stinks.
Yeah. Do we see any Bill Cosby content? I don't mean he puts out a new comedy special. I mean, does he go on I don't even know if Oprah's on anymore, but does he go on a panel show? Does he go on a podcast to talk about his experience, or does he just try to hide it out and vanish into the background?
Well, I would say he speaks out about it because he's got a lot of yes men around him. I mean, that's how, I mean, Hannibal Buress made the joke in like the 80s, was it, about what he did? And it took till 2019 to get him in jail for it. So I am sure, like, I even recall as he was on trial for this, he actually did like an open mic during it.
An open mic, really?
Yeah, not like like an established place. Like, he didn't go to, it was like some steakhouse or library and
some chuckle hut, like
10
yeah.
minutes. And
put your name on the list, random drawing. wait, pull the name. Bill Cosby? And then everyone's like, ha, 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 ha. And then you see him limping to the stage slowly with his cloudy eye.
You just imagine the kid behind him and all, this is my first night. How do I follow that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You get bumped for Bill Cosby. Dude, that eye looks like a magic eight ball. Like, it looks it looks like you shake it up and, like, a message comes into that eye.
I mean, he's 83. You can't – I'm surprised anything works at that age. But, hey, I mean, it happens. He's already put out a tweet, it looks like, for what I saw in the news. I'm trying to get to it. Okay. Ooh, it just went right past it. Give me a sec.
Live.
Fun, entertain.
Mike, live on the Cosby trial. He's driving down the highway, followed by police escort. Cosby's in the car.
Scott, I yelled at him my Fat Albert imitation. He did not look impressed. He did not stare out the window. I thought it was pretty good. Well, hey. But he just kept on driving. According to Twitter, I have never changed my stance nor my story. I have always maintained my innocence. Thank you, all my fans, supporters, and friends who stood by me through this ordeal. Special thanks to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court for upholding the rule of the law. And then he hashtags Bill Cosby.
Yes.
As if he needs the hashtag for it to go viral.
Now, here's an interesting thought that came to mind. So he has his own Twitter account?
It's showing on there. It's Bill Cosby with a blue check mark next to it. So
okay. So here's an interesting thing. Now, you know, I am not a Trump guy by any means, but here's an interesting, you have a former president, right, who technically has never been charged with anything, convicted of anything, was not impeached, who was banned from Twitter, right, for insurrections, for ridiculous tweets, blah, 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 blah. And along with like a lot of other right wing guys. But meanwhile, we're letting Cosby, fresh out of prison for basically drugging and raping girls and everything else, to jump on that thing, start hashtagging himself and starting to build a following. Something you got to take your opinion out of Big Donald out of this equation. How is one thing right and the other one wrong? You know what I mean?
Maybe they should make a deal where, like, these people that we don't, most people don't like, they all have to use one account. So it's just like OJ, Cosby, Trump. You can use Twitter, but you all got to share it at the same time. And also, it's It's like, I didn't murder my wife. And all. It's like, yeah, Donald, we didn't say that.
So here's the ultimate most listened to podcast of all time. Of all, any, you take Rogan's episodes, throw them out the window. You throw Cosby, Trump, and OJ on one podcast, and you just let them record for 2 hours. The most listened to piece of audio in the history of the United States, right there. You just let those animals just talk. Don't even. There's no format to the show. There's no host, because you know Trump's going to go in there right away and just blah, 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 right off the bat, and he's going to get it going. And then those, and OJ, he's another one who's not he's not shy to start talking. That thing would be the most listened to thing ever recorded.
Okay, Scott, I sent all three a tweet. I said big support of the Klan. Only one guy has answered. I'll let you figure that one out.
But
we're one third of the way there. We're one third of the way there.
Yeah, that would be something you could not listen to. It would not matter what your stance in the world is on anything. You'd be like, I have to hear this piece of audio. Forget the MASH finale. Forget the Super Bowl. It would be the most tuned in thing ever created. That would officially break the internet.
Yeah, that would be the thing to drop the mic on. Yep. It's like if we pull that off, and you're like, you want to do a new mother podcast? No, there is nothing we can do after this. Nothing.
Well, go ahead, head of Twitter. Hey, Cosby, Donald Trump, and OJ. Any interest in coming on next week? All three of you. We usually record Wednesdays at 7:30 if you're free.
Scott, OJ will only do Tuesdays. That don't work out for me, man. Sorry. Got the soccer game. Can't do it, man. Can't do it.
Occasionally we get a guest where we got to do it in the daytime. We're like, well, this is a big guest. Let's make it work. We'll figure it out. It'd be pretty great if you're like, nah, can't swing it. You know, you can do it on your own if you want, but I just can't take the day from work to record those three guys.
How did those three guys end up on the Natty Bumper Cast? What the hell? Why is Pig interviewing OJ?
I don't know, man. It's very interesting times, but, I think this is a good segue to our guest. Not quite a segue into him, but there's only so much I could talk about Bill Cosby and his cloudy eye. So, Mike, who do we got on the show today?
Scott, we're going to be talking with Scott Telema. He has worked with the Chicago Police Department for well over a decade. He's an FBI-trained hostage negotiator. He's a nationally recognized leader in the field of crisis and hostage negotiations and has been training thousands of police negotiators across the world in verbal influence. So we're going to be chatting with him on why on earth you would want a stressful job like that and what he's doing nowadays with the police force.
If you were the man taking people hostage, what would be the one thing that would get you to stop? Like, would they get you like a fresh burrito or a nice IPA? Like, what would just like diffuse your whole situation?
I mean, you know, a few compliments here and there.
Oh, just some compliment.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm gonna kill this man. Mike, you're a really good podcast. Oh, wait, what? You're a good-looking guy.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Mike, your football team is amazing. You're lying to me.
Hey, we won the division last year. That still counted. That's it. I'm going back to the hostages. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, you throw some. I think if you threw a nice cooked steak and an IPA at me, I'd be like, "What the hell was I doing?" Now I'm going to go to jail, but at least you've de-escalated the situation. So let's get Scott on the line.
Hey, Scott, what's going on?
What's going on, Scott? How are you?
Scott. How's it going?
I'm Scott. That's Mike. First off, you have a very symmetrical background behind you. Like, you are perfect.
We can mess that up a little bit if you want. If it make you feel better, we can throw some drumsticks off to the side or throw a guitar back here or something. You know, mess it up a little good for you.
My wife would have that perfectly like you. I would have like socks on the table by the plant and.
Oh, that's over there. I got all of that. We just in that pile of the basement right over here. This is for the television audience around the world. You know.
Yeah. If the interview goes a little awry, we'll probably like Scott. Just start messing it up. That'll be all right.
I'll spin around and give you guys my music stage over there and check it. We'll throw back there. How's that?
Wow. Do you have two drum sets over there?
Yeah, in case somebody wants to come over and jam with me. I can't just drum alone like a crazy person. Jesus. You know?
Yeah, in case Paul Simon shows up with the whole band, you're ready to go.
We're ready to go. We pull down some sticks and we're jamming.
Bruce, you didn't say the whole E Street Band. Dang it, I'm not prepared.
They're all here. We're going to do it. It's going to be awesome.
Scott, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes here on the podcast. We appreciate your time, so thank you.
My pleasure.
So let's dive right into it. Being a hostage negotiator, I guess the easiest, simple first question is, why would you want to get into a job like that where you can't have a bad day, I would suppose?
Yeah, you know, it's a cool combination of my education with psychology and behavioral science and my work in law enforcement with a need for a little bit of adrenaline. And, you know, after a while you start doing work like this, you become an adrenaline junkie and it's kind of fun and exciting. And you realize how much of the rest of your life is kind of boring when you do such a thing. But it's cool, you know, because you realize that your work has meaning, and it's kind of inspiring to know if you do what you're supposed to do and you do it well, you do it right, that you can truly help somebody out who's having a bad day, who's really in a tough time,
right,
who can't see the meaning in their life, who are just struggling to get by. And it feels like that's the whole world right now. I mean, we're coming through a year and change of this crazy pandemic where everybody is in crisis, everybody's struggling and full of stress and anxiety and loss. So I feel like what I know professionally is really, really applicable to the whole world right now. I mean, for a while, it was just these crisis negotiators that would go out and deal with these people who are really in these tough situations. But now it seems to apply to all of us because we've all been through some tough times.
That's actually like a really amazing answer, and it kind of took me back for a second. But yeah, that's a great answer. My question for you is, like, when in your police training or like when does it become like, hey, I could become a negotiator? Like, how does that even happen? Like, is it something that's offered for you, or like, is it a class that you have to take, or something that could? Are you interested? Like, how did you actually get into that?
Yeah, it's pretty a pretty tight field. You don't just get into this,
right.
Largely because, at least in the United States here, there's not really a lot of hostage takings. There really isn't a need for a lot of people that do this. We're called hostage negotiators, but really more appropriately, we're crisis negotiators. And that's kind of more of the work we do with an individual person. But there just isn't a huge need for us, so there isn't a lot of people who do this. And I remember being a police officer for a couple of years, and one of the schools in the Chicago area near me was had a hostage negotiations class as part of their psychology program. And I was like, well, that's pretty cool. That sounds like fun. You know, I've seen it in the movies, on the TV.
Right.
But I guess there's a significant difference between wanting to do something and being competent to do it. So I thought it'd be great to take that class, but you couldn't take the class if you weren't in the school as part of that program. So I ended up going back to graduate school to get a master's degree in forensic psychology just so I could take a class like that.
Wow.
And it turns out I went to a different school who didn't offer a class like that, so I never ended up taking that class. But when I was in that program, the timing was just perfect that a regional SWAT team that I was later part of was advertising for openings saying, hey, we need particular members of the team, and one of them was hostage negotiator. So I thought I'd put my name in and see if my qualifications could get me through. And I got lucky. Good timing, I guess. They needed somebody, and I fit the bill, so I got in. And
what
was kind of it was one of the better choices I've made.
What was your background though? Like, as far as like, why did you fit the bill? Like, did you?
Yeah, I went to school at University of Wisconsin, got a degree in behavioral science and some other things, and then getting a degree in forensic psychology. So it was they were looking for people who would be good getting in somebody's mind when they were stressed out, having, you know, mental health issues and whatnot. So that was interesting to them. I didn't have a lot of time on it. I maybe had 5 years in the career. Right. So I was probably a little bit young. I think some of the other agencies want some of the more mature, more experienced guys getting in. But, you know, sometimes you catch a break, and that was one of them.
What is the timing from them calling you, say, hey, we need you, to the time you're actually on the phone or I'm not sure if, like, in the movies they had the big old megaphone just saying, this is the police, this is a negotiator, blah, blah, blah. What is the time frame? Do you have?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, Kevin Spacey is jamming from home. In 2 seconds, he's on the phone driving 150 miles an hour, and there's fire going on all around him, and it looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
But really, it takes us a while. And, you know, I was part of a regional team. So we had negotiators kind of set up all throughout the Chicagoland area. So if there was an incident, chances are we could get somebody to the scene fairly quickly. And sometimes, you know, it's 5 or 10 minutes, we get somebody there. Sometimes if it's a far away city from where I'm at, it could take an hour or more to get there. You know, it depends. But usually we like to get somebody there as quick as we can. But I would say, you know, pretty standard. If you hit the SWAT button and you're calling for the SWAT team, maybe 30 minutes before you get some semblance of a team there, an hour, and you can really kind of get the people that you need, the equipment that you need to really get going and handle a pretty solid incident.
And for listeners, where are you based out of?
I am in the suburbs of Chicago.
Okay. So let me ask you, when you're going through this training and you're starting to think about, like, okay, I have to apply this to real life, is there any nerves going into it, or do you just dive into it completely? And then when it's day one on the job, it's learning on the job.
Yeah. I think that, well, I was trained by the FBI. So when we got selected to be part of this team, you go to the big league training and you get some really good stuff from some pretty experienced people. And they're really good at stress inoculation. You know, they put you in front of the whole class, so everybody's watching. And the last thing you want to do is screw up in front of a room full of cops who are all judgmental on you to begin with. And you don't want to embarrass yourself. So you're sitting, you know, we're sitting back to back. And really, it's just a bunch of listening exercises. They teach you to be a great listener, which is really different, I think, from what most people expect. They're going to teach you, like, the right thing to say and like, smooth talking and whatnot. You wouldn't be selected if you weren't a good communicator to begin with, but they really teach you to be a great listener. So you go through these stressful reality-based training scenarios over and over and over. And then in the team, you know, on your first day on the team, you're not the guy on the phone. You know, you're the guy getting lunch for everybody. You're the guy writing stuff down,
right,
you know, to really kind of get the feel of it. But I remember the first time that I was on the phone, I was stressed out. It was a man who the police department called our team. They believe that a man took a woman hostage. When they were knocking on the door, they were told to get out of there, and they could hear duct tape being unrolled. They thought they could hear a gun racking. So they're like, we're not going to mess with this. We'll call for the SWAT team. And I remember having that moment of, man, I can't believe they are going to let me be the guy on the phone. Like, they're going to let me be this guy to talk these people out of there and see if we can get it worked out. And I think it was really at that point that I really got it, that was the moment of, hey, this is serious business. This isn't just a class that you take. This isn't a bunch of skills that you practice. And it's really not about how much effort you make to get the result. It's about the result itself. So I think that was a real big turning corner to say, this is the difference between someone who's a practitioner, who's doing the work, versus somebody who's an academic who talks about doing the work.
What is usually the primary goal when you're in there? Is it getting the hostages out, getting the person who's taking the hostages out? Is it just spending time till somebody can get in and grab them? What's the major goal when you start this?
Yeah, it depends on the situation. And I teach hostage negotiation and crisis negotiation now across the country. It's one of the things I do. I enjoy doing it. And when I teach this, to answer your question specifically, I say that our goal is to create a bond. Our goal is not to get the person to drop the gun. It's not to free the hostages. It's not to, hey, put the knife down. It's to form a bond. And when I train with police officers, we do these scenarios. And recently I did a scenario with a lot of different police officers where I'm holding a knife to my neck and they're off at a distance. So it's not really a tactical situation. It forces them to engage in verbal influence rather than tactics because it's at a solid distance. And you get the guys that just go into this, put the knife down, put the knife down, put the knife down. And they don't have a mental framework because when we're just chilling here talking as guys, we can be creative, we can be funny, we can have a lot of good thoughts. But when you turn on the stress, the brain is really limited in its ability to, you know, expand and be thoughtful. We really kind of get narrow and focused. And if you don't have a framework or a goal in mind, you just start parroting, drop the knife, drop the knife. And you find out really quickly that doesn't work. That's not a strategy and that's not verbal influence. So when I teach negotiations, I say your goal is to form a bond with the person you're talking with. And, you know, you do this by following certain principles. But once you have a bond with somebody, then you've got influence. Then you're going to get them to go where you want them to go. Because we don't listen to strangers. You know, when right. we're talking about doing this podcast, you know, I'm checking out, you guys checking your credibility. You got great, great content, great big names. And I feel like I'm bonding with you guys just listening to your talk and listening to your guests. And that's when I say, I
apologize right now.
I say, I can't wait to be on. I mean, what a cool show. I want to be on this. So you guys have influence because I'm forming a bond with you, even if you don't even know it. So I say, that's the goal. Connect with this person, bonding. Then we get the influence of whatever it is we want. And sometimes it takes time. It takes a little while.
So when I think of like a hostage negotiation, like I feel like there could be like very aggressive or very like kind of like downtrodden or whatnot. Like, is that something you go into the situation? Like, I have to approach this as more of the aggressor right away, or I have to approach this like very soft and gentle and tread light? Like, how do you determine that?
Yeah, I don't think it's a great idea to go in when you got somebody who's in crisis and come in very aggressive. I don't think that's right. what it is because, you know, at that point you're dealing with somebody who's really emotional and really high. And when you're doing the introduction, we're already triggering the big autonomy piece because we're the police coming in and we're going to take your freedom away. So you're already defensive and the walls are up. So if you come in aggressive, you're only going to be met by somebody who wants to be aggressive back. I mean, think about you're in the weight room and you see some guy pump. What do you want to do? You want to pump more? And, you know, we have this competitive culture, I guess, at least in the U.S. that, you know, everybody wants to be better than somebody else. So I wouldn't say you want to come in, you know, passive in any way, but sometimes it's really disarming. You know, if I start the conversation, say, hey, my name is Scott. I want to see, you know, are you okay in there? How are you doing? You know, tell me what's going on. And you just start listening because the thought is I'm going to come in and I'm going to take over and I'm going to start telling you what to do and giving you orders. But the reality is we can't really do that because we're not in a position to back that up. If we could just go grab the guy, we would. So there's a need to negotiate.
What is like the normal like first step of communication? Is it via phone or is it via like a speaker of some sort? Like, is it always trying to get, like, how do you get in touch with these people immediately?
Yeah, it's changing. And sometimes that is the step that we get hung up on. You know, I teach kind of there's a series of things you need to do. And one of them is how do we actually establish the communication with this person? And a lot of times that's where we get stuck. And traditionally in these police negotiation situations, we have like a phone that we can toss to them. So we have this right. instant communication. But, you know, when I'm teaching negotiation in 2021, last week I was in Denver, next week I'm going to be in Louisiana. I say, hey, we're past this. I mean, our gold standard is, hey, we're big on active listening and it's all about listening. And it's this phone conversation. That stuff is over. I mean, that's living last decade. Right now, I'm so comfortable on Zoom. We can see each other and it's just very normal. I mean, we have this 3D communication where I can see your gestures, your facial expressions, and video is very, very common. So we have to get ready to communicate in this 3D medium. And, you know, I've done some forward negotiations where I've actually talked to people face to face. It's probably not the smartest or safest thing I've ever done. You know, you got somebody in crisis holding a gun to their head, and here I am talking to them across the room. Probably not the safest thing. But now we can have that same type of communication where we can see each other from around the world. So are we ready for this? And I hope that the teams are starting to evolve to say, you know, let's practice communicating by text message. I mean, how many guys are training communicating by text? And that's really difficult. And that's, I think, where a lot of people are most comfortable at. I don't have to reveal my voice to you. I don't have to reveal my face to you. That texting is a good start. And maybe we evolve to a phone call or evolve to a face-to-face. And we have to be good at all these skills, not just listening. So truly, it's evolving right now. And it's an overdrive, because a year ago or a year and a half ago, it would be really weird for me to sit down on a video call with somebody. I'd be like, right. Why do you want to Skype with
right.
me or whatever?
Right.
Yeah. And we're on Zoom yeah. all day, every day. The pros across the world, that's all people do. And we're very comfortable with that. It brings in a new skill set that we need to have.
Soon you're going to have to be TikToking with like.
I'll see you in my TikTok.
This negotiation will be for 30 seconds.
Back and forth on the TikTok. We'll do it.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, what was the longest negotiation you had to go through? And I'm kind of curious, is there ever a point where you're even stuck as yourself trying to think of like the next thing to say, where you're just like throwing something out there? Maybe you're cracking jokes with them. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, to answer your question, 18 hours, that was the longest our team has done, which is extremely long, because to listen to somebody, to have that deep human connection, to really have that connection, it takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just, hey, we're talking, hey, what's going on with the Cubs today? Nothing. All right. You know, the Bucks are losing, or, you know, whatever sports thing we're talking about. I mean, that's just kind of garbage communication where we're speaking to each other, but we're not really connecting. But to have that deep listening and that thoughtful, intense bonding effort, it is exhausting. And I mean, I think about like the work of therapists, psychologists who are intense with that patient. I mean, that's got to be just draining, because when we're in these negotiations, it's tough to do. And I think that like historically in the U.S., one of the longer ones is probably like that Waco standoff with the FBI with David Koresh and company. That was like 51 days. So, you know, in those moments that, hey, we're getting tired and this is going on for a while. All right. They did this for 51 days. Holy cow. All right. We can buckle down and make it to lunch here. But that's when, and I'm a believer, let's meet our basic human needs first and we'll get better. You know, if I'm not fed, I'm going to get grumpy and crabby. And, you know, my wife knows, hey, when Scott's getting grumpy, just give him a couple tacos and we'll get him back. You know, so let's take care of ourselves. And then we're more effective for some of those long haul negotiations. Well,
you touched on my next question. Like as far as the main goal of negotiating, because like people, we see it in the movies, we see it on the shows, but like, is the main goal of negotiating to get everyone out safely, to de-stress the situation where everyone kind of gives up, or is every situation kind of different?
I think from a negotiation standpoint, that's always our goal. Okay. No matter what, our goal is to get everybody out safely. And that means if there's hostages inside, get them out. If we do a good job as negotiators, that means that we don't have to send our tactical police officers to make entry, which is extremely dangerous. So we're protecting them if we can do our job. To get the offender out or get the person in crisis, get them out safely. So we want to get everybody out safely. And it's kind of cool, the dynamics within a SWAT team, because you have all these different specialists and everybody kind of wants to do their thing. You know, the breachers want to go in and get into the place. The snipers want to do their thing. You know, everybody is so highly trained. They want an opportunity to play and get involved in this scenario. So, you know, from an ego standpoint, our job is to keep the rest of the SWAT team very, very bored, you know?
Yeah.
When you go through all this talking with people and getting them down and doing your job, out of curiosity, when you grow that bond, when they are captured, do you talk to them afterwards, or do you check up with them afterwards, or is it pretty much once the handoff happens, that's my job?
Yeah, usually that's about it. You know, that's the last time we see them. But you see, there's been cases where people will say, you know what, I only want to come out if you are going to be there. And it's really not designed to be that way. But sometimes we've moved that negotiator forward toward where the issue's at. So, you know, if I got a bullhorn or over the speaker on, you know, one of the armored trucks or something, so they can hear a familiar voice, because they don't know everybody else. They feel they have a connection. They trust me. Or whoever the negotiator is in that particular instance. And I think that if that's a strategy to get them out safely, then absolutely do that. But we know that we're not entering into a long-term relationship with them. And from time to time at like negotiator conferences, you'll see a good debriefing where sometimes the negotiation team will interview that person that they were talking with, you know, some time down the road. And I think those are fantastic opportunities for us to learn from them, because, you know, the question is always, well, what did you remember? What worked? What didn't work? And one of the common themes that we always hear is, you know, I don't remember really what you said, but I remember how you made me feel, or I remember how you said it. So the content is almost irrelevant. And when I'm teaching negotiation classes, I talk so much about, don't worry about what exactly to say, because everybody prepares for their whatever negotiation they have, whether it be in business or in the workplace, however it is, they prepare what they're going to say and say, have you thought about how you are going to say it, and practice your delivery, because your delivery is what creates emotion, and emotion is what we remember. You know, people listening to the podcast are not going to remember a lot about the content, but they're going to remember, hey, that was an exciting episode, or that was really interesting. I learned a lot. And they're going to remember how they feel. So the people who are in crisis always come back to, I remember how you made me feel. I remember the way you said it. So much of our training is focused on the delivery, on how we present what we say, rather than getting caught up in, well, say this exact phrase or don't use this exact word. And of course, words are important. Words are what we use to frame the story. If you read the news headlines right now, more than ever in the US, you have MSNBC and Fox News talking about the very same incident, and you read the two stories and you have no idea that it's anywhere close to the same thing, because they're framing it out differently. Yeah. So words matter. Words give you credibility or take your credibility away. But I think so much of what we do needs to focus on that delivery.
Give me an insight to a negotiator conference. Is it like, yeah, we might break at 11 for lunch and other guys want to break at 1 for lunch, and then it just becomes like a debacle, like as far as like
Man, that's the only thing that matters at a cop conference. I come in and be like, you don't know who I am. You don't care what I'm going to be talking about. But here we go. We're going to take breaks every 30 minutes. We're going to take a long lunch, and I'm going to get you out early. And you know what? They start clapping and cheering. I mean, they don't care anything more. I could have nothing for a bio. My content could be garbage. But if we're going to have a long lunch and get out early, we're doing it.
I just feel like it's a meeting of the most persuasive people ever. Like, it's got to be amusing.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I think that my favorite part about these negotiator conferences are always the hospitality rooms, because there's great conversation,
right?
You know, and everybody's playing their game and doing their thing. And it's a lot of fun to be around those guys. You learn a ton.
But a serious question. Mike asked you, like, which I did want to ask you, the longest you ever been. But what was like the shortest you ever went? Like when you just like Christmas negotiator Eve, showed up, negotiator Christmas showed Eve. Up.
Yeah. So Christmas Eve, I get called out, and you're like, geez, it's snowing. It's right. Cold. You know, we're up in the Chicago area, so it's miserable to begin with. Mm-hmm. So we're driving there. You can't drive there very quick. And it was actually in an agency really close to where I work. So I was familiar with the area, and I got there. I think I might have been one of the first negotiators there. And my team lead was there, Patty, and she's awesome. And the rest of the team, we don't know if they're ever going to make it, because, you know, a good snowstorm, who knows when they're going to get there.
Right.
So, you know, you have this script. You know, my name is Scott. I'm with the police department. Are you okay? I'd like for you to come out and talk with me. It's just kind of like a football team scripts their first 10 plays or whatever.
Right.
I script my opening line just to let them know, identify myself by name. Let them know I'm with
them. Hey, I'm Scott. The warranty on your Jeep is running out.
That's it. Right. You're right. Yep. I am that guy calling you, yep. You know, and bothering you. I am that guy. So, you know, and I know how it goes, you know, so I say this right. and I'm going to get this big emotional response. I'm not coming out. I'm not talking to you. They probably hang up the phone. So, I mean, at that point, I'm starting to take off my boots because I'm going to get comfortable because this is going to go on for a couple hours. And he says, yeah, all right, I'll come out and talk to you. And, you know, I lean over to the boss and I say, hey, he's coming out. He's coming out. I didn't even know you're on the phone. Yeah, he's coming out. Tell the guys he's coming out. So let them know he's coming out. And that was it. So I think
Merry Christmas. Yeah.
Right. And so the lesson learned here, I think there's two big lessons from this. First of all, I studied negotiation under a guy named George Kohlreiser. He's a professor of leadership at IMD Business School in Switzerland. And one of his big things is put the fish on the table, which means address the conflict. Because we can dance around this all day, but if you leave the fish under the table, it's going to start to stink.
Right.
So let's not be afraid to say, Scott, Michael, what's going on? I got this issue. Let's confront this. So put it on the table, because sometimes we can get it addressed pretty quickly. And the second thing is, there is power and satisfaction in the process. That if you guys call up some superstar to be on the next episode of your podcast and he says, yeah, great. I mean, that's awesome. That's a win. But if you work on it for a week, a month, 6 months, and you get some megastar to come on, I mean, and you go through all that effort, it's going to feel awesome because you put in all this work. So I'm driving home and I'm thinking, well, that wasn't very exciting. That was almost like disappointing. You know, I usually have the feeling of, hey, we got the guy. This was awesome. Great job. So we got the result that we wanted. But why didn't I feel so good? Because I didn't put in any work. I was like, well, any doof could have done that. You know, that was nothing special.
Right.
So there's something special about that process. When people really have to work hard for something, the reward is that much more meaningful.
That's how I got Mike on the podcast. I tried and I tried for months and months and months. And then he finally said yes. And then after that, I was like, wasn't worth it.
It's all downhill from here.
See, the amazing thing is what Scott's story right there would be how you make Die Hard boring. Like, that would be just like opening trip. Hans Gruber's like, all right, I'll come out. Yeah, no hostages. Yeah, yeah. Merry Christmas.
Yep. Roll the credits.
Yep.
It's so amazing to talk to you and hear about all these things. I'm just kind of curious, outside of work, how great is having those kind of skills, like when you're trying to buy like a car or like trying to ask a girl out on the day before you got married? Like, that must be just like, I got you.
It's cool to know influence, to have these skills and have these techniques, because it helps you get what you want. And there's nobody in the world that couldn't benefit from knowing the techniques of verbal influence and know how to get what you want. And part of it is just, let's just ask for it. Let's have the courage to ask for what you want. So it's a little embarrassing, but we just missed our credit card payment and got the email that, hey, you're overdue on your credit card. My wife hits me up. Hey, did you forget to do this? Yeah. So, you know, we pay it and we're good. So I go online. And I was like, I got to get this late fee waived because I don't want to be hit with a late fee or whatever. So I go on that. And you're on this chat that they have online.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's, you're talking to a bot. It's not a real person that's writing back, you know? So I, you know, it's late fee and it identifies late fee. Is this what you want? And I say, yeah. And they're like, okay, we waived your late fee. So it is programmed in to automatically do this for you if you ask.
Yep.
So first of all, let's have the courage to negotiate, to be willing to stand up for ourselves. And when I teach negotiation, I say, I am teaching you to empower yourself to get what you want, to get what you deserve. And people ask, hey, is it tough when you meet somebody else who's really good at negotiation? And I say, no, I love it, because we can both explore, what do I need? What do you need? And instead of, hey, I can save you $20 on this, or I can get you $1,000 off this contract or this deal, we can really find, hey, it looks like you need help over here. Could you benefit from this? Because I could bring this value to you. Okay, well, that's interesting, because I know these people over here, and maybe I could introduce you to this network here. And it's really an exploration of where can I help build value on the other side, and it grows and grows. And I think that it's one of the most important skills that you need to have, how to negotiate. And yeah, it gets you better deals on cars. And I love going car shopping.
Yeah.
If any of your listeners don't like going car shopping, I will do it for fun. We're going to go together and just have a good time.
It's pretty funny. My wife is looking for a car right now. We just left the dealership the other day.
And some people think it's super frustrating. And for me, you know, I'll go back to the guy 10 times, you know, we're going to wear him down and we're going to have a blast, you know? So tell your wife, I'll hit her up and we'll go shopping.
I'm bringing in the big guns next week. That's right. Bringing in the big guns.
It's on your credit card. We're good.
So like through all of this and you're working, one thing, small question, like, how frequent do you work with this? Like, how frequent of a time in this? And then bigger question is, like, how rewarded are you through this work? And are you still passionate? You're obviously passionate about it through your answers, but what keeps you kind of going in this field? Like, you can go back to doing a bunch of police work and whatnot, but why are you still doing this?
Yeah, so I'm not on the team anymore. I'm a has-been. I did it for 7 years, and it's tough because you're getting called in the middle of the night, and right. and it burns you down a little bit. And truth be told, I'd love to still be on the team if I could.
Right.
My department has plans for me back at my agency, so they want me there. And how often we're called? Maybe once or twice a month.
Okay.
I mean, Chicago, okay. the city itself, is probably called out once or twice a week, and there are rural departments and county teams that say, hey, I've been a negotiator for 4 years and I've never been called out for anything. So right now my focus is mostly on teaching this and sharing this. I'd love to get back involved in the work one day, but I don't want to waste my knowledge and experience and my passion for teaching this. So I share that with police officers across the country, but now I'm also getting involved in business negotiations. I started a group called Negotiations Collective with a few people who are involved in different aspects of negotiation. And we're teaching these very same skills to people in the business world to say, you can use this too. And they probably have similar stories, not quite as exciting as doing police negotiation work. But I think the real reward is working with the practitioners, the people who are using this, and then getting, you know, it's nice at the end of the conference or the presentation for someone to say, hey, nice job, that was cool. But what the real value is a month or two or a year down the road when they come back and say, hey, I remember what you were teaching and I just had this call last night and we had this guy and I was doing what you were sharing and we got him out and our guys were safe and he was safe. And everybody's cool. And I just want to say thanks. And you'll get those from time to time
right.
when you're teaching that. And that's the kind of stuff that keeps me going to say, all right, well, I'm going to put on another class and I'm going to do it for free because I want people to get there. And there's so much of this. Hey, let's defund the police because that's a really smart idea. We want to make the team better by cutting them off. That's never worked in the history of anything. But some people believe in that. And in fact, it's happening. So that motivates me more that the last two full day classes I did for free. That not only did you not have to pay to go to the class, but you didn't have to pay me to show up. I went to Colorado, went to Wisconsin and said, I'm doing this because I believe in it. I want you to have this knowledge. I want you to have this information. Go out and do it. You don't need to pay. I think it's important because we can save lives. And that's cool.
It's awesome.
That's amazing. You do great work, and we really appreciate you coming on. I know you do a lot of public speaking. If anybody wanted to contact you to get you on board, listen to you, or anything else that you're working on, where could people go to find you?
Yeah, I appreciate it. I'm active on LinkedIn. That's probably my one big social media. So connect with me on LinkedIn. My website, scotttillema.com or negotiationscollective.com. Couple of different ways that you can find me. If you're interested in seeing my work, I was invited to give a TEDx talk a couple of years ago.
No shit.
And they said if it's any good, they'll publish that. So that's out on the internet, up on YouTube somewhere. It's called The Secrets of Hostage Negotiators. I'll teach you to be a hostage negotiator in 18 minutes. Take a look and give me a listen.
Last thing, we give you, you know, like there's a lot of questions with licenses and music and stuff. We give you full permission if you're ever in a hostage negotiation to play our podcast just on loop to get someone out of there. Like just to get them out of there.
Hey, have you heard of Verbal Shenanigans? I got some guys I'm going to introduce you to, and we're going to play some of your great episodes. Maybe we'll skip the John Walsh episode for the guys who are holding people hostage.
Put someone.
Yeah.
They'll come out immediately.
I'll see if we can work that in. I'll see. Hey, you know these guys on Verbal Shenanigans? Yeah. I think that'll work.
It's not bad being sponsored by the Negotiators of Chicago. It's a great right. sponsor. Scott, thank you so much, man. Stay safe out there, and we'd love to have you on again and dive even deeper into this topic.
Hey, Scott, I appreciate it. Michael, thank you guys both. It's been great. So much fun, and thanks for the work that you do. You keep us all entertained. Keep those episodes coming. We appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Mike, Scott, Telema.
Good stuff.
You think he could talk you off the ledge, or you're just, like, impervious?
I guess in certain situations it would be interesting. I mean, back in the day.
You lied to the audience saying that, yeah, some compliments. I know exactly how it would handle you in a hostage situation.
Okay.
Let's role play here. Okay.
Okay.
All right. You're the hostage taker. What do you call the hostage taker?
Villain.
Our brains. This is our brains working. Two dumb guys trying to explain hostage.
Listen here, you hostage taker.
Yeah. You could also tell by my question how stupid I am. What would you call the hostage taker? Yeah. All right. So you're
hit us up on Twitter and tell us what you would call yourself if you had hostages.
Hey, Fantwans, if you love opera, you'll love hostage negotiating. Okay, so you got a hostage, Mike. Uh-huh.
Do I have one? Do I have a few?
I mean, what's your fantasy? I don't know. You got a couple.
I just gotta have the idea, because like if I have one, then I'm down to like little if you have a few, then it's like, all right, you're persuading me. Let me send you one.
I'm just telling you right now, I'm going to persuade you no matter what the situation is, because I know exactly how to do this.
All right. So we'll say I have five hostages.
Oh, just a casual five, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
It's a good solid number.
All right, let's role play.
All right.
Okay. Hey, so I threw you the phone. I threw you the phone, or I got your cell phone number. Okay. Hey, Mike, how's it going in there? This is Officer Brennan. Just want to introduce myself. I'm Scott. And I just want to let you know, man, like, we know you're having a bad day. We know you're having a bad day out there.
Have you got my list of demands? I need everything to be taken care of before we can even talk about it.
I saw your list of demands, but the one thing we can't do for you is the Sixers, the Flyers, or the Redskins winning a championship.
Excuse me?
The football team. The football team.
All right. That's one thing I've on the list. You call them by the proper name.
I'm sorry. We can't meet those demands at the moment. We hear there's dogs barking in the background. It's a crazy situation. It sounds just like an episode of Cops, but this isn't Cops, Mike. You don't want to be on Cops. You want to be the guy that we just end this nicely. So I saw your list of demands. Saw the nachos, saw the we can't take away the cake that your family brought to the other one, but we heard your carrot cake is the best, Mike. We heard
it is the best.
Yeah.
And the world needs to know.
Yep.
That's why I've been telling these five people, and they try to tell me about Enderman's and some bakery downtown. I don't want to hear it.
Mike, we know that's not true because we've been listening in, and they've been saying, yes, sir, your carrot cake is amazing. Please let us go.
Well, they've been eating it for the last 8 hours. They better tell me that.
You've been feeding them nothing but cake. Mike, how can I get you out of there and to let everyone go? What's the matter? What's going on?
I don't think you can talk me down. I've been having bad times. I'm sick of this world. Mm-hmm. I know you're not going to give me what I want. I'm not coming out of it. There's nothing you can provide me.
I have something, Mike, that would interest you. It's going to get you out of the situation. But you got to promise me, Mike, if I present it to you, you're going to let those people go if you're happy with the situation.
I can't fathom what you could be offering me, but I will listen to you.
All right. Come here, boy. There he is. Mike,
wait.
It's coming towards you. It's coming towards you. It is. Look at our puppy. His name is Stu. Look at Stu.
Oh, Stu, hi, buddy.
Run! No! Run! Run!
Here, you hold my gun while I grab this good boy.
One hostage gone. Two hostage gone. Three hostage gone. Oh, Mike, the dog loves when you rub his belly.
Ooh, get over here. Come here. I'm going to give you raspberry. You got me a golden. Oh, yes. Hello.
Take him down. Take him down. Doof, doof. Poof, poof. The little red eyes come right on your head. There goes Mike. See? Was my negotiation tactic accurate?
I mean, it's pretty nice. I got the little one down here. She got scared from the thunder upstairs, so she came down to Daddy in the basement.
Yeah, so she basically was acting. She was role-playing right there. Amazing actor. You, on the other hand, horrific. I feel like, Mike, no matter what, I would just throw you a puppy, and everyone would be just fine.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or the sniper would just be like, ha-ha, see ya.
I mean, no matter, we talked about this before and all, pretty much no matter how pissed off I am in the world, that all I need to do is see a dog and we're pretty all right. So. Yeah.
Or dress up like a dog amongst other men and stuff like that.
I'm not a man, Pop.
Anyway, so Mike, I wanted to, we talked about this before. All right, so the conversation we're going to have, we're going to cover up every name, and we're also not going to answer any questions on names.
Nope.
Just for I guess so we have some semblance of dignity here on the podcast, but I feel like it's almost impossible to not address. Okay, so many moons ago when me and Mike met on the when we met on a hot first date, aka
the podcast that cannot be named,
aka a radio show. Mm-hmm. Or a podcast. Yeah. I came in as a new comic at an open mic, met a guy, told him I do some sound stuff, I really like production, whatever. And he's like, oh, I have a radio show, come on down. That's where I met Mike. Mike had already been,
declared the voice, yeah, the board guy, even though I had no idea what.
Yes, and really you had also been indoctrinated into the cult at that point, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good relationship because Mike was like the phone internet guy, which I'm not great at, and I was like the sound board guy, and it kind of worked really well, and me and Mike got to know each other. Now, we can talk and all and say that it was terrible. It wasn't terrible. We had some very good times. I got to know Mike a lot. We got to do a lot of comedy and kind of bonded over that and started hanging out or whatever. Eventually, I had asked Mike to join the podcast drunkenly while I was in Philadelphia, and we've done 360-something episodes since. So this comic can only be described as – well, it could be described as a funny comic. I'll give him that. He's got some very good jokes. I've seen him kill before and – could be described as very manipulative, though. Things have happened. We don't have to go into all the past. We won't go into that. But manipulative, has taken a lot of younger comics on to drive them around. Mike, I know you were in that boat. You drove them around for a five-minute spot here and there. I got asked to drive them a few times, got a spot here and there. But it was, when you're a young comic and you're not young per se, but young in the comedy world, comedy world, you're just dying for any time on stage, so you take it and you use it, and then you, hey, I get a couple minutes, I get to go see this big star. He had a great way of making himself seem like he was a lot better than he was.
Yeah, we should have questioned him when we spent Super Bowl Sunday at a male strip club telling jokes, but
did I tell you I told that story for the first time ever on stage very recently?
Really?
Yep. And it went to, once I find the beats in that story, like the comic timing, I think it's going to have some legs. But anyway, long story short, I don't want to bore you guys with the ins and outs of it, but we went to a male strip club on Super Bowl Sunday because we were going to do a show called Hunkamania. I was the host, bombed my ass off. Mike was the, I guess you can call him the feature, the next act,
yeah.
bombed his ass off to the point where he's on the ground, like slithering on the stage at one point.
Yep.
Bombed. And then the headliner went up and bombed also, and he got paid. We didn't. There was a blizzard on the way home. Whatever. Really funny story for the times, especially where we were at in our lives. Mike was a single guy. I was going through a divorce. So it was like the camaraderie I needed and the road trip I needed. So I don't even look back at that as bad times. I actually thought that was kind of a great night in some ways. But that was the kind of things this guy would do. He would say, hey, drive me to the show, I'll get you a couple minutes, blah, 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 blah. But then we start to learn the ins and outs of this guy. He was doing it with women, like living with women and saying, I'll pay rent. And one day he had a unlimited credit card at the music store. And like, he brought me along and let's buy this board and these cable. I'm like, we're doing pretty good, man. Like the show was perfectly fine. Like we finally had it dialed in. It was such a simple setup, and we figured out the internet and all that stuff, and things were good at that point. I was enjoying the show. And
yeah, that was when there was only like six people on the show.
Yeah, but it worked because like me and you kind of had like a minor role. I was getting to like write for the show, which I thought was fun. And
mm-hmm. I wrote too, and no, I did the opening monologues a lot.
Exactly. So it was like fun to do like little bits and sketches, and I was still having a good time. It'd still be like some late nights here and there. Show got out of control. We started doing like, there was like 12, it was like anyone he met, come on the show, be part of the show. And everyone had a bit, and I took on this like organizing role, trying to figure out the show. And I was like, and then the mixer got like into like a 24 port gigantic mix, like whatever. Like kind of like, so unnecessary for what we were doing.
They were getting the cameras with the on the iPhones that were like moving because we were going to have a YouTube channel, even though there were weeks. I literally say, guys, you didn't put up the episode. Yes, we did. No, we didn't. Yeah. Yes, we did. And then we found out they were private. And
me and Mike were by far the most committed. We would go there, talk about it, help out. At one point, we had to move the show from the comedy club we were doing. We were setting it up in my basement, testing lights, running cables. He wanted cameras that move. Like we could have just set up like three webcams and been fine, or a webcam and been fine with a good audio feed would have been fine. We were going for it, and it was kind of fun because I liked the production side of it. I thought that was pretty fun. But things started getting old, blah, 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 blah. So that's where the context is to how we met this guy. Now, all along, this guy had done a show before us, with us, and then after us, kind of with his mother over and over and over again. Like, and there was some good content between the two of them. No doubt about it. And his mom was sick, supposedly. And that was her whole thing. They'd make fun of each other, blah, 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 whatever. Mom, like... So I'm going to fast forward. I'm just going to wipe you right to the next stage. Whereas the show ended, didn't work. Everything got kicked out. It was too much. There was equipment everywhere. The show turned into a six-hour ordeal on like a Tuesday night. And the mom, like as I became Facebook friends with her, and Mike, I'm sure you did too, started to notice some like serious super right-wing, borderline, like, racist, like, things going on with her.
Some deep state stuff, and, yeah, like, there was, like, a bit with a nerd comedian where it's kind of funny. She was red, he was blue, and there was back and forth. But some of the stuff she would put up on Facebook, that was like, ooh, that went another step, didn't it?
Yeah, like... I don't consider myself anything, so I can see both sides, like to the point where you're like, wow, okay, this is super extreme at some point. Now, this comic, more stories happen along the way where he's like taking money from people for procedures that he needed, which weren't that what turned out not to be the procedure. It was something cosmetic he wanted, blah, 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 blah. Mike was there for that one if he wants to elaborate without revealing too much.
yeah, so I'll do the quick end of the story. Yep. So basically, he convinced a comedian that's friends of both of ours that he needed to do a procedure. Believe the story was there was fat on top of his lungs that they wouldn't like just do. They needed to do a special procedure, and he needed money for it. And in fact, that said comedian like called me the day he gave him the money, kind of like, oh, I'm worried. I think he's going to try to move in with me or something like that. And then, like, when he talked to me later, he's like, oh, it's something else, but I can't tell you about it. Super secret. Mm-hmm. And then we did a road kind of like weekend tour where we went to some places in Virginia, and said the questionable comedian was basically having stomach pains all throughout the trip. He canceled like some events a week before. After the first thing, we had to basically rush him to the emergency room. It turned out his colon was kind of paralyzed. And they had to do some procedures to do it. When me and another person were leaving, we talked to the woman he lived with at the time, where she stated basically, yes, he had cosmetic surgery, and this is basically was in a reputable place, because most places, if you do a surgery, they're going to make sure you go to the bathroom before you leave. This place didn't, and he had a paralyzed colon, and he basically almost died because he didn't poop for like 2 weeks.
Yep. So that's the kind of person we're dealing with here. Now,
yeah,
the mom, okay? The mom always said she had cancer, believed it. I think she did. In the end, had something, but things were weird. She never changed. One minute she was dying, according to him. The next minute she's like on the radio show and coming to the this and that. All these things started to add up and start being weirder and weirder and weirder and weirder. Okay, so now, okay, this comic states that. So, okay, long story. So the mom passed away, I guess, Mike, recently, correct?
October of last year.
Yeah, so whether it was from the cancer or not, that's not the point of this story. Like, it was sad, you know, totally. And we had some good times with her and some interesting shows. And I was doing a summer show with them, whatever. Now, suddenly the mom passes away, and now suddenly the son is stating that he also has a disease, stage 4 disease. But yet, now he had blocked Mike. I mean, he had blocked everyone else from the show, but he may have let Mike slip through the cracks. You're able to still follow this man.
Yeah, I'm still on there, and pretty much every member of the show, for the most part, has been blocked by him. And, so basically in January, he stated, yeah, I have stage 4 of this disease. Started about 2 months ago. So by the math, his showed up the same time his mother died of the same item. And it's basically, he's one of those, you know, I'm quiet. I don't want to talk about it. But recently, more and more, it's like every status is talking about, oh, I went to the Mets game. I've been spending my life trying to live it. Now I'm worried about Jake DeGrom having a bad day. It's like, hey, I'm in, I'm dealing with stage 4 cancer. Oh, by the way, I'm doing this bar show in Lower New Jersey next week.
Yeah, stage four, and then going out into public at a bar and doing comedy. Okay.
Yeah. Add to it all the pictures. No changes whatsoever. Also add to the confusion, he supposedly married a different girl, not the same girl that we talked about earlier with the credit card and he was living with earlier. A different girl he married that he was supposed to be living in Kansas with, but somehow he's back in New Jersey for some reason, again, to kind of do like very low-level comedy shows. Like, I'm not talking about like, oh, he's doing the Stress Factory, nope, or any of the big stages in New York City. He's literally doing like a show where we were like, me and Scott could get $20 doing.
Yeah. Kind of like, these are sociopath kind of behaviors. Like, he just wants to get up on stage because that's his thing. And he is a funny comic, but like, all the rest of his life is the most shady stuff in the entire world. So I had looked up, because I didn't know a lot of this information. I didn't even know his mom passed away. So today I was like, oh, let me go look up his mom and whatever. So the one of the last things left on her wall, I felt like it would be fun to share. So here we go. This is the kind of person that, these are the kind of things that she believed and would maybe read. And I don't know if she was. Anyway, Barry Obama Hitler. Barry is Hitler's grandson. His aunts are Angela Merkel, Theresa May, and Dalia Gruszpaczka. The swamp is deep, from a friend on Facebook. And came from Navy intel, guys. From Navy. If you post, if you say this came from the Navy, it must be true. We did not win World War II. We lost to the Nazis. They withdrew to formulate and infiltrate worldwide. Hitler did not, capitalize, die in a bunker in 1944. That was his butler, who was also his body double. He escaped to Argentina with other SS, where he lived a long life, dying in 1957 in a car accident. Eva Braun went with him and their daughter, Anne, who had been born in 1942. While in Argentina, Eva and Adolf had three more daughters who were taken to Germany to be raised in the motherland. Their names are Angela, Teresa, and Dahlia. More on this later. Okay, so right away, Hitler's not dead.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
You know, he suffered a lot. Like, he was at the top, and then he got a big loss. And happy to see he got his life back together in Argentina, started a family.
Happy life, according to her. Yeah. Other Nazis fled to Antarctica. So, Mike, back in 1941, you just flee to Antarctica and survive. No problem. No, apparently.
Yeah, you can start a garden up there, I'm guessing, and all. Maybe, you know, build a small shack. I mean, you got to.
No, Mike, because according to this, they had bases beneath the ice. Beneath the ice.
The Nazis
had ships. They would label them UFOs that could fly from pole to pole in less than 30 minutes, Mike. They can go from the North Pole to the South Pole in 30 minutes.
Ooh, they can, like, start a pizza company in the North Pole and deliver it, and they won't have to give it away for free because it'd be under 30 minutes.
Yep. After Hitler died in Argentina in 1957, Eva Braun changed her name to Madeline Lee Payne, took their daughter Anne, and moved to the U.S. She married Stanley Dunham, and her name became Madeline Dunham. Anne became Stanley Ann Dunham. Anne was 19. She became pregnant by a Kenyan national named Barack Obama. Like, she moved to Kenya and gave birth to her son, Barry. In time, she realized that the man she married was already married with children. She returned with her son to America. Shortly after her return to America, she married Lolo Sotoro and had a second child, a daughter, Maya. Further, Hitler was a Rothschild. His mother was Clara Palsy, who was employed as a maid in the Austrian home of Salomon Meyer Rothschild, where she became pregnant by him. She returned to Germany to give birth to Adolf and later married Alois Schlickgruber, who later changed her name to Hitler. The bloodlines are very, very important to the Illuminati, and they farm out their children and have illegitimate children to spread their bloodlines far and wide, Mike.
Did you know that Barack guy, he was a president once?
Yeah, according to her, Barack Obama II was Hitler's grandson, Mike. That's some Game of Thrones, like, boom! Oh, my God. Yeah.
Dang, you know. Remember when it was just simple, when it was like, no, nah, I'm not sure about the birth certificate. Now we're going to layers of, okay, hear me out.
Yep.
I got a diagram up here. I got some pictures with the little tacks and strings next to each other. Let me just tell you the story. It'll make sense in the end. Believe me.
Well, let me read the end then. Enter Barry Sotoro. if you've been tracking with me so far, your jaw should be on the ground, Mike. Let me make it clear for you. Barry Sotero equals Barack Obama II, Hitler's grandson, Rothschild by blood. This might explain why his aunt Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany, kissed him and looked at him so lovingly on a visit there. His other two aunts are Theresa May, former Prime Minister of the UK, and Dalia Grybauskaitė, the President of Lithuania. Hitler's plan for the Third Reich has morphed into today's Fourth Reich, and his offspring have been placed into high levels in strategic countries to further the Illuminati cause of the NWO, a.k.a. the Nazi World Order. And this, Mike, is the final line. This is what Trump is taking down. Boom. Yeah, what a great president. Taking down the Fourth Reich, Barry Obama, the grandson of Hitler. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I think that's why the Democrats made the COVID to distract him from taking down the NWO and Hulk Hogan.
And then the Fifth Reich that's coming. The Fifth Reich, yeah. Which is
Booker T.
Joe
five times.
Joe Biden is definitely the best friend of Hitler, I heard. They were war buddies. And then Jill Biden, I heard, was also they had a dog, and the German Shepherd birthed a human somehow, and Jill Biden came out. It's unbelievable what these people are able to discover through the internet.
Yes, and it's amazing how all the checks and balances that occur beforehand couldn't catch it. But these people who click a link on the internet find it in like 2 seconds. And I think we should, start hiring some of these people and all, because they're
maybe they could be the new head of Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, come on now. Now you're pushing. And now I'm going back in with my hostages, and we're going to have to negotiate this out, Scotty. Well,
anyway,
you went too far there.
These are the kind of people that we dealt with, and this is what we're saying. So the believability of this guy is basically at zero. If he is sick, I wish him the best, and he can get better. But the cards are stacked against you as far as believability, at least from me, and I bet you Mike feels the same way. But very interesting.
No, I'm going back on tour with him. Yep. He promised me another 5 minutes, and if I just take him 2.5 hours into Western Pennsylvania.
That's so. It? Oh, all right.
That's legit. He's saying he's hopeful. He's hopeful. So.
Mike's coming back from comedy hiatus to do
chauffeur comedy.
Yep. Chauffeur comedy, Western Pennsylvania, guys. Tune in for that day. But anyway, I thought that was fun to share for you guys, just so you know what kind of psychopaths are out there on the internet. But Mike, it's come that time. Is there anything to promote before we go?
I will promote a experience I went to over the weekend.
I wanted to talk to you about that. We'll wait for the next episode.
Oh.
But yeah, promote it.
Nothing to promote.
No. I want to know your experience. But yeah, let's do that for next week.
Okay, so what we will talk about next week is the Van Gogh, the immersive experience. It's in Atlanta, Georgia, in downtown Atlanta. It's a really awesome experience where they had this immersive history and showings of Van Gogh's paintings. They have
paintings.
They talk about his history. There's an entire room that just transforms into all the different artwork that he's done, with narratives about some of the quotes that he's done. What I really recommend is the VIP experience, where you actually get 3D goggles and they take you on a 3D tour of like his homeland and kind of give you a story of where he came up with some of his paintings and all. It was a really fun time. It's going for a few more weeks, so if you're here down in the Georgia area, go to VanGoExpo.com and check it out.
I've seen that online in the New York area. I wanted to go to that. It looked pretty cool. So I
will pick Miami, New York, Philadelphia, Seattle, D.C. It's all around. So if you're not in Georgia, check it out in your local area.
Awesome. Yeah. I'll pick your brain about that next week. I will promote quickly a comedy show next Friday. at Rock Ridge Country, Rock Ridge Community Club, Lake Club in New Jersey. It is open to the public. It is $25 to go to the show with a killer lineup. My buddy Jackie Byrne, Matt Jenkins, myself, and Mike Burton. Right out on the beach, bring a lawn chair, food truck, open bar. There's a whole bunch of cool things going on there. So I'll post a link up on the Verbal Shenanigans page. Come on out. It's a good time if you're local here in New Jersey. Other than that, guys, I want to thank the Fantwans for keeping this podcast going in the social media world and interacting and sending us messages. That is awesome. I want to thank you, fans, for listening. And the best thing you could do for us is leave a review on iTunes. And I want to thank Scott for coming on the show. What a very interesting interview. Other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Peace.
And OJ and Bill and Donald, we look forward to you coming on next week.
Oh, you guys are going to be blown away by that one.